What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, sponsored by peer-run support communities Freedom Center, The Icarus Project, and Portland Hearing Voices. Madness Radio can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network and is online at kboo.fm/madnessradio. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Today, my guest is Nas Siddiqui. Nas is a graduate student at the California Institute of Integral Study. She's a therapist trainee at the Liberation Institute in San Francisco and the founder of the student group Spiritual Emergence and Other Extraordinary Experiences. So welcome to Madness Radio, Nas Siddiqui.
Oh, thank you so much, Will. It's great to be here.
Now, you yourself have been in the mental health system. You've been in hospitals and you were given a diagnosis of psychosis. And now you've gone on and done training to yourself be a therapist. So it's really exciting to see someone who has that experience then go into the profession. And I think that you bring a very unique perspective to your work with clients.
Yeah, thank you very much, Will.
So tell us, how did you make this process from being someone who is a mental patient in the system and in hospitals and with that diagnosis and going through those experiences, how did you make it to where you are today to now preparing to graduate with a master's degree and moving towards your license as a therapist?
You know, everybody has the capacity for what may be called altered state experiences as a child. You know, I don't think that it was pathologized or looked at as weird or anything like that.
Like imagination kinds of experiences?
Yeah, imagination. You know, I think kids do it all the time. And part of it is play and part of it is imagination. But I think part of it is also, you know, being in touch with what's called the imaginal realm and the realm of using fantasy to help create what our reality is. And kids do it all the time. I entered the psychiatric system, you know, when I was 19, and I actually didn't have altered state experiences. I was experiencing clinical depression. I feel like it was for reasons that most folks can relate to or understand. You know, I was at a high stress school. I was at Yale. You know, I was really stressed out by finals coming up. I mean, I was taking freshman organic chemistry. It was really hard.
Freshman organic chemistry is definitely depressing.
It was hard to grasp. And, you know, it was like I was putting a lot of pressure on myself. And I have like a family that really values education. And so I got really anxiously depressed. And I also, there was a breakup involved. It was my first heartbreak. I was going through some identity crisis, like, what am I doing with my life as a 19-year-old? You know, like, do I devote myself to being a neurobiologist or do I devote myself to doing social justice work? It was a lot of pressure. I sought services at Student Mental Health Services at Yale. And, you know, I was met with a therapist who is just really concerned more about, I think, of me as a liability issue than me as a person who is a struggling Yale student. You know, through a long, actually, it wasn't even a long turn of events. It was kind of just like one session of sitting with her and telling her kind of how I was feeling and expressing suicidality. I got involuntarily hospitalized at Yale. And so, you know, it was really scary, you know, because I, you know, Yale was my dream. I had applied there early decision. I lived on Yale Avenue. So I was like, well, it's in the stars. I have to go to Yale. So like, you know, I went and I got involuntarily hospitalized because I had strong expressions of suicidality in the room, which were actually more kind of just like I don't know what to do right now. Can you give me some services and help?
Do you feel that the involuntary hospitalization was necessary to save your life?
No, not at all.
Were you given any options? Did they say, well, do you want to go to the hospital or what?
No.
So this kind of really interrupted your Yale career. You were just trying to get help and then suddenly you're in the hospital against your will.
So, and you know, from that hospital experience, I ended up being kicked out of school, actually.
On what grounds? Just because of the fact that you were depressed and had been seen as too suicidal, or what, how come they kicked you out of school?
I think so, yeah. And so, you know, that put me in a really difficult situation. And, you know, I ended up, you know, finding a psychiatrist and a psychologist. And, you know, it started my relationship with the mental health system. It started my relationship with psych drugs. And, you know, it was very hard being kicked out of Yale. For me, it totally was unexpected. You know, I came back to Yale and everything. You know, there's a difficult readmission process. But like I came back and it's just, you know, it was just like not a very supportive environment. You know, I loved a lot of my classes. I did well in a lot of my classes. But I noticed that, you know, I was still on a lot of psych drugs, and I kept getting added psych drugs as I saw like student mental health services at Yale. If I had like a little bit of depression or anxiety, it's like, here, I have some more psych drugs. And I didn't know how to, honestly, I didn't know how to say no to a psychiatrist who was saying like, no, you have to like up your meds. I'm a psychiatrist, you know, like I know what I'm doing kind of thing. Not that they presented it that way, but you know, I was just listening, following doctor's orders, even though doctor's orders made me lethargic, made me unable to read, you know, sometimes with like the meds I was on. My like ability to read decreased so much, being put on psych drugs, and it was really hard for me to even be able to like, you know, something that would I would have been able to read very easily. It was hard because my it got just I everything was clouded. So I had to put in a lot more effort for my studies. And then so, you know, what happened in 2004 was my first altered state experience, which was really, really intense. It involved a lot of like mythic imagery. I felt like I was kind of in a dream state the whole time, but I was in touch with a lot of just emotions and
What was it that led up to that? How was it that you went into this altered states experience?
yeah, well, what happened is along the course of my treatment, I had been put on lithium. And I really didn't like lithium. I remember, you know, describing to one of my friends that when I was put on lithium, I lost contact with my spiritual connection with trees. Like trees no longer seemed alive to me anymore. They seemed dead and gray. But I just kind of resigned myself to being on the drug because I was told that I had a chronic illness and I had to be on this drug for the rest of my life. So basically, in 2004, I decided to just come off of it cold turkey. And I, because my psychiatrist wouldn't really support, you know, that. And so I just, you know, I was just like, screw it, you know, I'm just gonna come off lithium. You know, I really think that the coming off the lithium without any supervision led to that altered state experience.
So you were not getting any support. You didn't want to be on the drug. You weren't given any options for slowly reducing or any kind of cooperation from your doctor, it sounds like. And so you just said, okay, I'm going to do this myself. And then it threw you into this altered visionary state. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that was my first experience with psychosis. I didn't have psychosis before I was put on psych drugs.
What was it like? What was the experience like? You mentioned having strong emotions, and what was it that you went through?
I had these like really just really strong like ideas and visions and philosophies. One of them was really funny to me in retrospect. I was going through just so much internal anxiety and suffering around not understanding my world. And I was just trying to do this weird balancing intellectual mental activity where I was trying to balance self-love and love for other. So, you know, if I would take into account, like if a person, for example, was from a disenfranchised status, kind of like how I should interact with them. It was kind of like this really involved process, and it was exhausting me.
So you really got lost in this mental self-reflexive process of thinking yes. about love and how to receive it and how to give it and all the different
yeah.
differences between people. And were you like staying up all night and having these visions and talking a lot, or what is it that you were doing?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely staying up all night. I mean, I was creating a lot of art. You know, I was talking to everybody. I wanted connection with everybody. And some people were very receptive. And actually, some people were very glad for the connection, because I would connect to people who are living on the street. I would connect to, you know, people. And like, it was just like emotional experiences with people that I didn't know, and we would just go into deep emotional states together. You know, I ended up coming to my psychiatrist, and I was clearly racing. My words were clearly racing to him. I don't think I had the self-awareness about that. You know, and he picked up some paranoia too. I was having just a few paranoid thoughts. I remember saying to him, like, hey, like, I'm not sleeping. I'm creating all this art. I'm trying to stay on top of my studies. And isn't it weird that the number 555555555 called me? And, you know, I was saying this probably in a really fast paced way, and I ended up also getting involuntarily hospitalized at that time, which I don't think was with standard grounds of hospitalization. I mean, I didn't tell him about kind of like the amazing like feelings of unit of consciousness and cosmic bliss and like staring into a coffee cup and like thinking about where the coffee cup came from and who put energy into making this coffee cup and, you know, like where the materials came from, like thinking about like how, you know, kind of everything, like trying to figure out how everything worked, everything's history, trying to find like a way of making meaning of this world from a very mental kind of, you know, like intellectual perspective. I didn't tell him that, or maybe I did when I was racing, but I just didn't feel like he would get it, honestly, because he wasn't receiving anything I was giving him before.
So you weren't a danger to yourself. You weren't suicidal or threatening other people or anything like that, but you still ended up getting just put in the hospital.
I got kicked out again, and I had to go through readmission again, but it was very disruptive being kicked out of Yale. You know, I wasn't with my original class. Housing became an issue. Like, who was I going to live with? I graduated, but, you know, I graduated with a little bit of a, I don't know what to call it, like a little bit of a lot of resentment, actually. And a lot of damage.
And you had this big altered state experience, and then you did end up graduating from Yale. How did you sort of make sense of it? Did you start to put it into a spiritual framework? And then what was it that led you to want to be a therapist with that experience?
Well, I mean, I continued to have altered state experiences every time I tried to withdraw off my medication. I think what happened is that, you know, I was put on Abilify as well. And, I tried to withdraw carefully, actually, several times with clinical supervision. But it felt like, you know, every time I got to a certain level, I would go into a cycle of sleep deprivation and going into a psychotic state. just trying to kind of piece together what was happening in these dreamlike states.
Someone might say, well, look, you know, your brain was just going haywire because of the chemicals. There's no meaning to it. All this content was just random chemical discharge from an intoxicated brain that's affected either by, you know, lithium withdrawal or Abilify, or affected by this psychotic illness. So what would you say to that? Do you think that these experiences had meaning, and were there themes and patterns and messages and purposes that you see for you having those states?
So I feel like in a weird way, I was thrown into these psychotic visionary states so that I could help heal myself and help heal my family and my karma, honestly, to make it, put it into a more like spiritual transpersonal lens.
So what were those patterns or meanings or messages that you discovered that were healing for you?
I was in the kitchen once with my boyfriend, and he was washing the dishes. And I started, you know, with the altered states, it's really interesting because the connections start getting very loose. It starts getting very metaphorical, and things start to take on meaning of kind of deeper or maybe also confused meaning, because it you detach from the mundane reality of what's actually going on to kind of like a more collective understanding of things, but it's taken out of context. So he's doing the dishes, and I just like kind of flipped into an altered state. This was also during a time when I was trying to come off my psych drugs. And I just took on this framework that he was putting away the evidence, right? And what was the evidence? Just try to follow me. It's a little loose. I was making connections between like a person putting away like the dishes, the cleaning up the dirty dishes and putting them away to kind of like, and this is a really big jump, but
so in that moment, you're there with your boyfriend and doing the dishes, and suddenly the dishes and putting away the dishes starts to take on this huge, huge significance for you.
It took on the significance of cleaning up something and forgetting kind of what happened, like sweeping something under the rug. And it took on the significance of what happened with the Bangladeshi genocide. And, you know, at the time, there were people who were on trial for the Bangladeshi genocide. It was in the news. It's part of my heritage. And it really, somehow I just leaped from this putting away the dishes into this like, wow, my heritage is Bangladeshi. My parents are genocide survivors. And the Bangladeshi genocide is being framed as a forgotten genocide by historians. And there was a trial going on at the time of like war criminals. It was not getting the press or the attention, but it just really struck a nerve.
And was this something that was ever talked about in your family? Because this is part of your own heritage. You had a direct connection with this.
As kids, I remember doing this play called Blockade. Blockade is the story about how these protesters from the U.S. helped organize a little crew of ships to stop the freighters from delivering arms to the West Pakistani army. And so we learned a little bit about what was happening, but it's just something that's not really talked about too much because it's super traumatic. And I, you know, as much as, you know, we want to remember the losses, it was a very hard time for my parents.
Was this a war and a genocide that affected them directly?
Yes. So my dad, his family at one point was taken out of their house and lined up like as if to be shot by a firing squad. but their lives were spared, and they were homeless for quite a while. And, you know, my mom, she had her very close great-grandfather was a doctor, and he was escorted away and shot and killed in the back. The genocide in Bangladesh was very intense. You know, reports say at least 1 million, to some say 3 million, were murdered. The people who were targeted were university students, professors, healers, thinkers, intellectuals. There was mass murders and mass rapes. So something about these dishes that my boyfriend was doing, it just flipped me somehow to that space. And I was in that space while he was doing the dishes. And
even though this was talked about a little bit, it wasn't really something that was addressed and healed in your family. And so you're carrying all that with you in that moment when you're in this altered state.
Yes, there's a lot of trauma that's unprocessed and carried. Yeah, it's a lot. And a lot of the content of my altered states started carrying content around the Bangladeshi genocide, how it affected my parents, how it affected my ancestors, and it very dark, difficult material that would come into my psyche at times, and I would have to learn how to use mindfulness to not get overcome by these states and get confused at what is happening in my mundane reality to these really difficult historical traumas that kept showing up.
So what happened with the dishes in that moment?
The environment actually started getting very violent towards me, which is not that the environment changed. It was actually the same. It was just the kitchen. But it started feeling violent. And I started noticing the knives. There's like this ominousness came upon the environment, and it felt like the environment was out to attack me. And it's kind of a weird kind of way to think of an environment that's so benign as a kitchen, but it was like the entire environment was out to attack and kill me. Including, you know, my boyfriend, who's like putting away the dishes and putting away the evidence. Yeah, I would go into these spaces of really violent feeling like the world was violent towards me, and just have to use mindfulness and orient myself to the present, like, hey, no, I'm in the kitchen. I'm with my boyfriend. He loves me. He's just doing the dishes. Just focusing on kind of little things. Like there's the kettle, and so, you know, I would use mindfulness. I would check in with my body. I would breathe to just bring me back to a state of the present and the here and now, so I wouldn't get lost into these places where I felt like the entire environment was going to kill me.
So this was really a kind of like a teaching that came out of those altered states that really pushed you through an extreme kind of terror, really,
yeah,
to developing your own capacity to use meditation and mindfulness.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I started exploring this violent energy that would pop up in my environment related to Bangladeshi genocide or related to trauma. And so that, you know, I had personal trauma I'd experienced. I started sitting with my therapist. And what's interesting about altered states experiences for me is that once I've had them, I can access them kind of on cue. And so, like, my therapist and I started exploring. This is not, like, the most pleasant state to explore, but we started exploring that state where I felt like the environment is going to kill me kind of state. And so I would bring in that environment, like, environment is going to kill me state, kind of reluctantly, but also with curiosity, because I wanted to kind of get to the bottom of it. It's like, why would this state keep coming back to me? And we found out that actually it's associated with a lot of kind of repressed rage. And tapping into this rage, it felt like a rage that was just even beyond myself. It was beyond just, like, you know, my, like, Nas as an angry person or whatever. It became like this, like, intense rage that I could feel in my body that felt like beyond me, and it felt like actually connected to my historical past. And it felt connected also, I felt like my father was also carrying that kind of rage. But none of us, you know, are able to express it, because, you know, we're just living our daily lives, you know, getting by. My father's a professor, you know, he's very, like, very esteemed professor. You know, I'm a graduate student, I'm a therapist, you know, like, so we just try to get by every day, being kind people. But it's like all this rage is contained within my body and my history and my psyche, because, you know, like 3 million of my family, you know, Bangladeshi family were murdered. Like, how can I just sweep that under the rug? You know, like, I've tapped into this, like, intense rage. And then after I started exploring the amount of rage that I was carrying, things started shifting in a really magical way within my family unit. My family started connecting with me at a much deeper level than I had experienced in my life before. You know, my dad and I were pretty distant, and we didn't really connect verbally that much. But he started sending me photographs, and he's an amateur photographer. And the photographs correlated to animals that happened to be what I was thinking about. I would be thinking about, like, an insects too. So I'd be thinking about, like, dragonflies. And it just, like, go into this space where I would be like, oh, I love dragonflies. They're such cool bugs. And I would look into, like, I'd Google their, like, shamanic meaning and be like, yeah, dragonflies are super cool. And at the same time that I was thinking this and not even expressing this to anybody, really, except my friends, my father started sharing pictures of dragonflies that he started taking photos of. This kind of connection didn't happen before, until I actually started processing some of the rage. And then it continued to happen. Any animal that I started to think of and started to identify with and started to kind of think about the way that these animals interact with the world, or insects interact with the world, my dad would start sending me photographs, his own nature photographs of them. And then after this period of massive synchronicity where I was sending, you know, like, I would just think of an animal and spend some time thinking about this animal for a few weeks, my dad would send me these photographs. My dad and I started having these conversations. He just suddenly became really a lot softer, a lot more open-minded than I had experienced him ever before. And it kind of blew my mind. I was like, what is happening here? This is really kind of weird and mystical. But it feels like the fact that I'm doing this inner work, processing this deep rage that is within my family system, something is being opened and something is being released. And this is allowing me to connect with my father and also with my mother. It started happening with my mother too, on a different level of consciousness, on a different plane, which then led to actually us being able to connect on kind of a regular level, much more easier.
That's a beautiful story, Nas. It really is.
One altered state that I had where I was kind of running around in backward circles is what it looked like if you saw me.
you were literally like running, your body was running around backwards in circles. That was the wild psychotic state that you were in.
And what was happening in my mind at that time was, oh, the earth is falling apart. The earth is falling apart. Why don't people understand climate change? Why don't we, like, what are people doing? Why aren't we developing more fuel efficient, like, I don't know, like, you know, energy efficient ways of living? And then, but there was like this level of like pain. I was like spinning in circles in pain. This state, like after I came out of it, I was like, wow, even if I wasn't tapping into some earth understanding or knowledge or whatever, and I was just tapping into kind of like my experience with how I'm trying to understand climate change, it started shifting me. And I started having a deeper connection with the earth. Like I would go into what I would call trance states. I would feel like I was contacting a higher self. These trance states would involve like lovely colors and usually purples and pinks in my environment. And I would just be in this state of like ecstasy watching these purples and pinks. I'd always come out and find a way to connect with the earth in a way that was good to my body, and like learn about how like the earth supports my body and how as a human being, it's my responsibility to support the earth. Like one time I remember I came out of this trance state. I was like, I need to commune with peppermint. Like I need peppermint in my system. I don't know how this knowledge came to me, but it just, I feel like it was connected to this like trance state I went to. And all of a sudden, like waking out of that trance state, I was like, wow, I need to use peppermint. And the peppermint was actually very helpful to me. Peppermint helps me focus. Peppermint helps me relax. Peppermint helps with headaches. I often get headaches. You know, peppermint is like a huge plant ally for me. And so like I started learning about plant allies through these altered state experiences. And now I use a lot of plants and I'm in relationship with a lot of plants and plant essential oils and the actual plants. And, you know, it helps me like connect to urban nature. You know, it's like I live in San Francisco. There's plenty of nature, you know, beautiful nature outside the city. But, you know, the city is kind of concrete jungle. These altered state experiences have brought me to this place of like ecstasy around flowers. I walk under these bottle brush plants, which are these like beautiful little, like they have these beautiful like pink flowers that look like caterpillars. And in these like states of ecstasy, I would just be so smiling and happy to be around these beautiful flowers, which had so much energy. And even though I'm not in altered state these days, I just still feel that connection with plants and the earth. So I feel like these altered states have really taught me how to connect with the earth, taught me how to connect with my body, taught me how to connect with my history, taught me how to connect with my family, taught me how to connect with the present and mindfulness, because I learned that skill through navigating these altered states, and taught me how to be a better therapist, actually.
How do you see that as being something that you can translate from your own process to helping other people? How does that actually get into practice as a counselor, and how do we get that into helping other people in their process?
these are valuable human experiences, and allowing people to share about them and normalizing them and to bring them into the normal vocabulary of human experience is really important. So I think that, you know, allowing people to get in touch with their spirituality, their cultural heritage, and exploring the content of what happens in these states, it can lead to a lot of healing, not only for the person, but for the family and for the collective. I have learned actually to have a wider capacity for compassion for human beings, a wider capacity of compassion for myself and understanding myself, understanding my family, even understanding war, I think. You know, I go and talk to people on the street a lot still, and I'm not in an altered state. But what I hear when I talk to people who are living on the street is often many of them say, well, I'm diagnosed with bipolar and, you know, I'm a war vet. You know, if they're in a state that's clear, oftentimes that's what they'll say. You know, is like, you know, I've had, like, lost, you know, my father, or, you know, they'll start talking about trauma. And even if they're not in a clear state, and if they're rambling and you kind of in a fast paced, what seems like a manic space or a psychotic space, is that if you sit and listen and tune in and provide a empathetic, warm presence, that people slow down and they don't ramble about things in metaphor and the CIA, but instead they start talking about, you know, I was in this car accident and I lost my daughter, or hey, I was sexually molested, or hey, I was raped. And they start actually sharing the trauma, because I feel that altered states hold a lot of unspoken trauma. A trauma scares people, but it's present. It's here. It happens every day. If we can't, as a human species, acknowledge and listen to the traumas that we're causing each other, even if we're not directly responsible, then, you know, the psychosis is going to continue, and people are going to continue to get lost in states. Whether they're on meds or not, you know, it's like some people definitely do, because they're trying to process things that are very, very hard to do on an isolated basis. And there really needs to be a community effort to acknowledge that people who go through psychotic processes are actually holding a lot of unspoken trauma, whether it be their own personal trauma or collective trauma. That's what's happening, in my opinion. Because trauma is so hard to process, people start to process it in metaphorical, confusing ways. And then what happens is they get disregarded. They end up getting thrown in jails. They end up losing contact with reality and wandering the streets.
Do you think that there's a danger of taking a lot of the spiritual perspective on madness or on psychosis and altered states and then kind of putting it in the hands of experts?
Yes, I feel like there is a danger between distinguishing between people who are going through what's called a spiritual emergency or spiritual emergence process and a psychotic process, because I feel like everybody is actually going through a spiritual emergence process. It's just that some people have more sensitivities and they have more trauma to process, honestly.
Yeah, and some people have more resources, or they have the class background or the privilege that allows them to get a spiritual emergence counselor, where the other people are relying on the public mental health system. I think that those class differences, often race differences, are really key to how the different experiences are being perceived.
Yeah, that's a big interest of mine, is to bring these transpersonal perspectives to the community mental health system, because I don't think that people who are in the community mental health system have access to transpersonal therapists generally, because transpersonal therapists generally charge a lot of money, expect people to have a certain educational background. Spirituality does not have to be, it's not an elite thing. It's really not an elite thing. Spirituality is something that everybody has access to. The concepts are actually not that difficult. You know, you don't need like a graduate level education to understand transpersonal concepts like synchronicity. And I think introducing these ideas to people who are in the community mental health system could be very powerful, because I feel like a lot of people would resonate with them. It's just that, you know, the access to this knowledge is there in books, but it's not there in clinical practice, because it's like the therapists in community mental health settings often are not trained in this way. Transpersonal education is sequestered in the ivory tower. There's some very basic things that I feel like are true to people's health. Learning how to take care of oneself, for example, nutrition, even though nutrition can get a little tricky too, it's like, you know, we know some things about nutrition. And nutrition is very interesting to me because it can be looked at several different levels. It can be looked at as just like, yeah, we're putting food in our body to nourish ourselves, but it can also be looked at from a spiritual perspective. Like it can, you know, nutrition can be attached to the chakras. Nutrition can be attached to our subtle energies. Why aren't we sharing this knowledge that we have with people who I think would benefit from learning? Because I feel like it's accessible. And if they're not interested, that's fine. I mean, you don't have to learn about chakras or whatever. I think that framing it not just like, oh, don't eat McDonald's, but framing it as a spiritual thing too, as like food is part of spiritual nourishment, food is part of our culture, food has like this actually really big, profound meaning in the life of a person.
Do you think that there's also a danger in some of what you went through? I mean, there people are taking a spiritual perspective on their own, what would be called psychotic experiences, their hospital experiences, their altered state. Do you think that there's a danger in that? And what were some of the risks that you felt you faced in your own process?
Yes. And, you know, I was talking about my repressed rage from historical trauma. And, you know, I am a person who doesn't manifest in physical aggressive behavior, but people do. And I've seen people in altered states go into physical aggressive behavior. And yes, that needs to be contained. Like nobody should be getting hurt from a person who is in an altered state. But there are ways to deal with physical aggression that don't involve shutting a person's whole brain down with a drug.
Nash, you mentioned that your altered states experiences are really driven by psychiatric medication. And now that you're not taking psychiatric medication, you don't go into them involuntarily just from the withdrawal, but you do go into them voluntarily. Tell us about your relationship to those altered states today and how that works for you.
Well, I think this connects back to what I was saying about kids and altered states and having access to imagination and the imaginal realm. One thing that I do when I'm scared and when I feel like I need some extra protection is I call in my imaginal hornets. And I feel like my hornets, which surround me, they're obviously not real hornets. I don't have, you know, real hornets surrounding me. But I feel inside stronger knowing that I have allies that are imaginary in a way, but also not imaginary, that they help strengthen me. They help me move throughout the world in difficult situations. And I call on different animal helpers. So I'm very grateful to Altered States of Consciousness for introducing to me these animal helpers. you know, living in what's called synchronicity is a pretty cool way to live life. Synchronicity is when an internal experience, a thought or a feeling or like a dream manifests in the outer world. And there's always a relationship between my internal world and my external world. It's quite magical. The environment is full of so much stuff. People just walk with filters all day. And it's important to filter information because, you know, you can't like bring in every speck of dust into your mind. You'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm so overwhelmed. I wrote an article on transmuting historical trauma. And a synchronicity for me was that the article was published on October 30th of 2015. And I found out, actually, that was the 30th year anniversary of the mass shooting that happened to me when I was 3 years old that I witnessed in Springfield Mall.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it was interesting to me that like my article was public. My article talks about a mass shooting and a woman who was labeled as schizophrenic and is currently in jail, who committed the mass shooting. And, you know, my article reflects on psychotic experience, and also like, and trauma. And one thing I noted in the article was that this woman was she was described as a normal kid until she was sexually molested by her grandfather. And so like after this molestation happened is when she started getting violent and, you know, started skipping school, started going into altered states.
So this was a mass shooting in Pennsylvania that you actually were a witness to, and then later you didn't even know the date, but then you published this big essay about intergenerational trauma and synchronicity and history, and it's on the date of the anniversary of that shooting.
Yeah, it's the 30-year anniversary.
And what do you make of that? What meaning do you think that connection has for you?
Well, for me, it's meaningful because the woman who committed the murder shooting, she's quoted as saying, "Every time October 30th rolls around, I feel deep sadness and deep shame about what happened." And it's just like meaningful to me that this article was published on October 30th, 30 years after the shooting, because it feels like a lot has been process through my writing of that article, honestly. You know, like as a kid, witnessing a mass shooting really affected me. I think that like learning that, hey, this woman who shot up people at the mall where my mom and I had to hide behind a bookshelf in Walden Books, like I didn't have understanding of what was happening there as a three-year-old. And like I found out later, there was a two-year-old shot right through the heart, actually. And I did some research on him. So, you know, as a three-year-old, there was not a real understanding of what happened that day. But now as a 33-year-old, like 30 years of reflection of what happened that day, it actually makes a lot more sense to me.
Nas, we are just about out of time. Can you give us contact information if people want to get in touch with you or find out more about your student group at the California Institute of Integral Studies?
Spiritual Emergence and Other Extraordinary Experiences has a website and a Facebook. The website is spiritualemergencecis.weebly.com. And our Facebook is Spiritual Emergence, CIIS.
Nas Siddiqui, thank you so much for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thank you, Will. Thanks for having me. This has been a real honor.
You've been listening to an interview with Nas Siddiqui. She's a graduate student at the California Institute of Integral Studies, a therapist trainee at the Liberation Institute in San Francisco, and the founder of the student group Spiritual Emergency and Other Extraordinary Experiences. That's all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. Madness Radio is sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices. Host is Will Hall and producer is Nina Packabush. Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO-FM and the Pacifica Network, and shows are archived online at madnessradio.net.